Okay, Darren, go ahead.
Thank you, Sandy. Hi, everybody. God bless everyone, and thanks, Amy, for asking me to speak. It's funny, you asked me to speak, and then a couple of days later, I got a phone call from a friend I haven't seen for a while. He said, "I want you to take me through the steps. I need to go through the steps." So I feel like I'm being called, if you like. It's nice. I feel so lucky, so lucky. In fact, just reflecting on We Agnostics over the last couple of days, thinking about tonight, it's just it makes me want to go to the promises because I'm living, and I've not had gratitude really enough. For how I'm living now, that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will instinctively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, which obviously is a direct kind of contradiction of on 52 in We Agnostics of the bedevilments. Thinking about the bedevilments, I remember when I was being taken through BBA, and I don't know if you, but my sponsor said to me, when my step guide said, "Darren, are you prayed to misery?" But I said, "Yes, can I change it?" "No, I can't change it." And when it got to, "Darren, do you have a feeling of uselessness?" I just started crying. It could make me cry now because that was my life. I had just lived with this feeling of being useless. Born from the fact that all the efforts in my life of me on self-reliance, trying to come up with solutions to get all the things I want, love, freedom of judgment, being kind, giving, being useful, not being resentful, all those things that I wanted to live without, I couldn't muster. So obviously some things would work now and again. Girlfriends were good for that. Falling in love was good for that. Food was good for that. Exercise was good for that. Watching a movie, you name it, we've all done it. But when I personally found drugs, that really kind of gave me that sensation that I had been searching for, the freedom from this pain. Because the tyranny of living under that mind, of the self-obsession, not knowing that's what it was, of course, these are all words that have been given to me in recovery. You're just living with this thing. As Paul Hedeman calls it, this parasite. I've just got this, like, I've been taken over by this. It's got my whole in control of my whole system. It's got access to all my files. It knows everything I've done, every time I've been frightened, every time I've not been a man, if you like. And that's what I found also really interesting. I'm going to digress here and there, sorry. But it attacks my manhood as well, my mind. It's not just attacking, it's not just kind of bigging me up all the time. It's attacking my manhood. It's telling me that a real man would do this. And again, all of these kind of things I found after doing BBA. So what a gift, basically. What a gift we have. And I do find myself now in situations and handling them with ease and thinking, wow, where did that come from? Recently, I did a job and they didn't want to pay me, which was not very nice. I spent a lot of time there, knew what the bill was going to be, but then they decided they weren't going to pay. So I entered the material world and tried to use emails and letters and do everything. And I spoke to my sponsor and then realized that it was, they wanted to pay so much and not this final bit. And as soon as I realized I was trying to wrestle this money out of them, and I was trying to force my will, as soon as it was seen, it just went. I said, that's fine. Pay me what you want to pay me. And I was able to kind of walk away without regret or anger. I mean, I can't help but now and again think about I want to go around and, I don't know, set the car on fire. However, that's what my mind does. It's not a surprise, is it, that when it's quiet, my mind's either, I've learned, it's either in the past, the future, or I'm the subject or object, and it's in one of those four. At any point, that's where my mind is. So it just doesn't like the quiet. It doesn't like the now, just the being. So it's, though, to go back to the development, trouble with personal emotions, creative misery and depression, all of that is, it's, as it tells us on page 23, it's in our mind, the problem's in our mind. So it could pick any one of those and be in the future, the past, subject or object. So that quickly multiplies. And then you go through any relationship and the same applies. So basically you've just got this back catalogue or future catalogue of fears that it can just go to and think, right, let's think about that. And I'm literally, I had no power to stop that. In fact, I remember when I was trying to give up drugs and I'd done about 3 or 4 days and I felt like I was doing really well. And then one day I woke up and it was just on me, don't score. And I knew, and I was having this kind of internal dialogue of, I was aware of this, the contradiction. I didn't want to do it, but I was being told to do it. And I knew that I was going to have to do it at some point. It was just a matter of how long I could hang on. Before I gave in and you know, and picked the phone up or got the bus or whatever I did. And sure enough, you know, I failed. So going into the world with self-reliance, trying to deal with these things in my mind and these feelings and that feeling of being uselessness, and needing that to be treated, it was really tough. It was really tough. And then it says, basic solution to these developments important, whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight. And it's been pointed out to me that lunar flight thing, which is, I like this. It can just be a distraction. It doesn't have to be, you know, is more important than global warming or electric cars, or you can pick something modern to kind of modernize the book. But it was, I heard that it's more important than any distraction. So a solution to those bedevilments is more important than watching a movie tonight or catching up on the box set or whatever thing I'm doing to avoid doing the work and doing what I need to do, if you like. So yeah, it's just a little thing, but I quite like that. And there's a promise just on the next paragraph. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. So there's a promise. But coming to the meetings at first, before I found BBA, it did feel like a solution and did give me a little bit of freedom. So the more meetings I did, and it did seem like when the circumstances of my life improve, I feel better. But of course, jobs disappear, relationships break down. That kind of untreated alcoholism, that untreated bedevilments will just come back. And that's what happened to me after 20 odd years of recovery. I didn't know God. I didn't have a relationship. My life had improved. But I'm still being plagued by emotions and not being able to control them and not understanding people or understanding myself in situations and not having and feel that feeling of being useless. And I think, don't think I said it before, that's where I was going before I got distracted. There's a deep, deep part of me that knows I'm useless and knows that I can't do it. So the book talks about fear and how, and it's kind of the problem, a corroding thread that goes through all our lives and stuff. But according to the book, self-reliance is the problem. So I'm in fear because I'm in self-reliance. Because if I'm in self-reliance, every single bit of me knows I can't do it. I've tried it all my life. So fear really isn't the problem. Self-reliance is the problem. If I'm in self-reliance and I'm trying to impose my will on any level, be that future, past, object or subject, I'm doomed. So yeah, BBA brought all this to life for me. And page 53, just after predominance, when we became alcoholics, crushed by self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. And again, I can't postpone or evade it because it is me. That self-reliance, that self-imposed crisis. I'm just trying to... with first face proposition, either God is everything or God is nothing. God either is or isn't. What was our choice to be? So I don't want to be a master of my slavery to my self. And it says later on, step three, doesn't it, that we're unable to get rid of self without God's help. So I don't want to become a master of self. I want to be free of the slavery, this self-imposed, ego, mind-made, separate self, doomed character. And it's only been the seeking after finding the where God lives deep down within me that's been able to me to be free of that slavery, that tyranny, I was being convinced that's what it is. And seeking has enabled me to melt. It's God's will. It's not my will. It's not something I can do. So, and I've been trying to think about how to explain it. So if I'm, I've got a couple of notes here, so forgive me, that the self's idea of God, so my idea of God is me as a separate individual, separate self, and then there's the world, and then there's God. But that it can only be that way if my image of God in that sense is a reflection of myself. So if I'm in self and just thinking about myself, the God is going to be my God. You know, it's kind of just me. So anyway, as you start to lose that, as my higher power, if you like, my understanding of that, as myself has, and my ego has dissipated, and it's been seen for what it is. And it mentions childish faith, like with the Wright brothers in this part too, that they would never fly. They had a childish faith. And for me, it is a very childish faith. This feeling is very childish. When we're children, you hear a noise and you don't label the noise. It's just a noise. If you don't know what a plane is and a plane flies over, it's just a noise. And there's a real beauty in that. And I honestly think we spend the rest of our lives trying to get that back, get that innocence back, that beauty of just experiencing whatever's happening. So, you know, I'm not in the future, past, object or subject. It's just is what it is, you know, now, if you like. So as my separate self has died, and that childish faith has kind of come back, or love, if you like, I realize I've always had that with me too, ever since being a small boy. And for a lot of time, my separate self hated that part of me, the fact that I could be vulnerable, I could be upset. It saw it as a weakness. And it's, again, only through the grace of BBA and seeking that I love that part of me now. I love being innocent and childlike. And there is a meditation where you try and be that child, if you like. So if you hear a noise, you don't label it as a dog or a door, or it's just noise. And it's beautiful, honestly. If I might have said this before, but try it. It's just fantastic. There's so many things around this part of the book that I used to be, and faith and love. And I've also read or heard that you can't describe God, of course, but there are two things we know. It's loving and unconditional loving, evidenced by the fact that anything can happen. And also my mind can think anything. So it is, again, it's within me. I can think anything. And used to judge myself harshly on the things that went through my mind. You know, I've been some dark, dark, sick places. And when I think of that as me, there's a harsh judgment that comes with that. There's children having their legs blown off in Yemen and things at the moment. You name it, it can happen in this world. And as horrific as that is, it's beautiful that it can. That's unconditional love. And the other thing we know is that it's creative. And evidenced by the fact that all we have to do is look around us. So whatever it is completely loving and creative. And my sponsor, I don't know what time we're on. Sorry, Sandy, you know how long we've got?
Two more minutes.
Oh, thank you. It's perfect. My sponsor used to tell me, God loves you. God loves you. He loves you more than you can imagine, more than you can possibly know. I think, yeah. And I don't bloody feel it, you know, when you're in self. And he said he loves you like a child. Think about how you love your children. And then a few years back, I was taking Daniel to different, my son, to different universities to look around, see which universities you wanted to go to. And we'd been to, over a period of a few weeks, we'd been to a few, a couple in the week, a couple of weekends. And this one weekend, I was driving back with him. We'd been down to Birmingham way. It's about 2.5 hours away. And at all the places we'd been to, he'd put his hand up for questions and got involved and when other children were. And I was just so proud of him. And we were coming back over the hills, and this feeling of love for him was so powerful. It just is so incredibly powerful. Like every part, every tissue in my body. I said, Daniel, you know what? I love you so much. You know that, don't you? You do understand how much I love you. It's just beyond. I just love you so much. He said, yeah, I love you too, Dad. But that feeling, I realized it's not, no one put it there. Daniel didn't put it there, my son. It's just, I accessed it. It's in me to a depth that's just frightening. And all the uselessness and emotions and prey to misery, depression, all that just blocks me from that. And people not paying you and cars not working and this, that, the other, we just get blocked. But that love is prior to everything. So it's before my mind, I believe who we are. So, you know, I don't really pray anymore to a God outside of me. It's us, it's everything. So yeah, it's nice to talk about it. Thank you. Love you all. My AirPods.